Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to be talking about three different topics, foods, non-food items, and medicines. Sort of what they call properly the basics of what we need to do or know about for Pesach. Just before I begin, I want to introduce by mentioning a few items, what I call resources, which is that most people, since you only do Pesach once a year, find it somewhat overwhelming to know what they should or shouldn't be doing or exactly all the things that they have to do. There are many ways out there to find that information about these things. Locally, there are two very good ways to do this. Being as this isn't a good event and I do work for the CRC, I can't tell you which guide is better, but the CRC and the good, they both have guides that are very different from one another, and both have lots of information in them. The CRC, in addition, for those of you who use these types of things, we have apps, we have a website, we have a special website. It's not just for Pesach, but it's there for all year round. It's called Ask CRC, and it opens you up to just a search box where you can type in anything that you want to. As if you get bored and while I'm talking and you want to check up what I'm saying, you can type in the types of foods and items and cashiering of counters and anything else that you're interested in. And if you're looking in the Pesach section, you'll get information on those things. We continuously update that. According to our numbers, our office staff was tracking last year, and 47% of the questions that we had last year had the answers on Ask CRC. So if that helps you, just to know the kind of questions you're looking for. Next week, both the CRC and the Aguda are doing kasherings. We're not going to talk about that today, kashering, but there's kashering available. We have videos on our website of different things that have to do with Pesach. What I'm trying to bring out to you is that there's lots of ways to get information about things that you wonder about for Pesach. When you have questions, take advantage of those things. But more important than all of that, or together with all of that, is everybody needs to turn to their own Rav. They need to know their rabbi's phone number, because there's lots of questions people have, and they need to be able to call him and say to him, tell me what I do about this or that, or can I kasher this, or can I use this thing? Okay, let's get started with the foods. On Pesach, we're not allowed to eat chametz. Chametz means things that have come from the five grains: wheat, barley, rye, spelt, and oats. From those five grains that are mixed with water, those foods become chametz. Something that's chametz, we're not allowed to eat it, we're not allowed to own it, and we're not allowed to have any benefit from it. So, for example, some common things that have chametz in them, bena fiber is a laxative that people have. Some people have. I have it in my house. Bena fiber, it's made completely out of chametz. There's only one ingredient in it is wheat starch, so it's chametz. So that means it's not only can't I use bena fiber on Pesach, I can't even own that bena fiber. Or I have Play-Doh. We don't have Play-Doh in my house. But if you have Play-Doh is made out of just plain old flour and water. And that's considered chametz. Regular flour that you use for during the year goes through a process called tempering, which is to say they sprinkle a little bit of water of it and it sits moist for many hours. So flour is considered stuff of chametz, and anything made from flour is therefore automatically chametz. Even something which seems as Pesach as matzah is not kosher Pesach unless it's made specially for Pesach. Because the simplest reason is because it has flour and it says tempered. And that's true of flour. It's not true, and it's true of oats as well. Oats also get moistened as part of the process of getting them ready to be put into the cans or however you buy them. But the other grains, rye and spelt and barley, if you have them in their plain form, and you just have a bag of barley or pearled barley, it's the same thing. If you have barley in your house or a bag of rye or spelt flour, those don't get wet at all during the process. And just the grain itself is not chametz. So if you have bags of barley left over, there's no reason not to keep those Pesach. They're not at all chametz. Okay. But in addition to what I mentioned, you can't eat it or own it, you also can't have benefit from it. And that comes up very much. I mean, this is a continuous stream of questions about pet foods. A person is not only can they not own the pet food if it has chametz in it, they also can't have somebody else feed it to their pet on Pesach if it has chametz in it. You'd be surprised as to how many pet foods have chametz in them, particularly for the larger animals like dogs and cats. So if you either are knowledgeable or courageous enough to read the ingredients, you should do that. Or else there are ones out there that are known to be recommended. We at the CRC happen to give hashkacha to a company. Their pet food is absolutely completely treif. I mean, it's all made out of, you know, nevelos and treifos, but it has no chametz in it, and it also has no basar b'chalav. For year round, you can't feed your animal. You can't have benefit from basar b'chalav, milk and meat mixed together. And so those ones that we, so to speak, give hashkacha to, they're treif as anything, but they're suitable to give to your pets. Okay, different than chametz is kitnias. Kitnias includes a whole slew of foods, rice and beans and corn and soy and I don't know what else, peas and a whole slew of other items that are asr, but those are only asr to eat them. You're allowed to keep them and you're allowed to have benefit from them. So for example, if you use baby powder is usually made out of cornstarch, it's kitnias, so you can't eat it, but you can own it and you can use it on Pesach. You can use it for, I don't know, for whatever you want to use it for, and you can keep it. There's nothing wrong with owning those things on Pesach. Almost every single infant formula or nutritional supplements for senior citizens, almost every single one of those has kidneys in them. The people who give hashkacha, primarily the OU is the one who gives hashkacha to it, puts out a list of which ones have no chametz in them, and therefore, those that have no chametz in them, you can keep them on Pesach. And for a person who's elderly, or a person who's sick, or a person who's an infant, they're allowed to take those items. So as long as you make sure that it doesn't have any real chametz in it, they all have kidneys in them, but kidneys can be owned on Pesach, kidneys you can have benefit from in Pesach, and for someone who's sick or a child is allowed to use them also. The only thing to be careful about is those, since they are kidneys, you don't wash them together with your chametz dishes, so you wash them in the bathroom or some other sink that you're not using for food items. The general rule is the two exceptions to what is included in kidneys. Kidneys does not include any spices, and kidneys doesn't include any grains or foods that were not around at the time when this minig started. The minig is a couple hundred years old, and therefore spices should not be kidneys, and new grains made for like of quinoa and amaranth, those grains would not be kidneys. However, although what I just said to you is true, there are concerns about the way those are packaged and ground. So we tell people that they can use whole spices, but not ground spices. We have a concern that the ground spices are made on equipment that also used for things that might be chametz. And the same thing for quinoa. If you've ever seen it, it's this tiny little grain, and it's packaged in machinery that could be used for other things like that could be chametz also. Okay. There are lots and lots of foods that can be made either from chametz or from kidneys or from things that are completely innocuous, that nothing shiloh to them at all. As an example, alcohol, vinegar, things with starch in them, flavors, all of those could be made from chametz. They could be made from kidneys or they could be made from potatoes or sweet potato or something like that. So for all those things, what we say to people is that they should, of course, avoid them, not knowing whether they are or not chametz. If you have pickles in your house, you have mayonnaise that has vinegar in it, then you can't use it on Pesach unless it's hashkacha for Pesach, because we don't know what the source of the alcohol or the vinegar or the flavor in those items are. But it's not just the food itself that you see it has in it. Sometimes you have to just open your eyes a little bit and you'll see the chametz that's in there. As you may or may not know, licorice and soy sauce, almost always the second ingredient is wheat. Okay, so you don't have to be such a know so much about making food to know that those can be chametz. Well, if I have licorice and the second ingredient is wheat, well then I can't eat that on Pesach because it's chametz. But then also we have foods like liquid medicines. We're going to talk about medicines in a minute. But many liquid medicines have in them something called xanthan gum. Okay, xanthan gum sounds innocent enough, but in fact xanthan gum is made by a process called fermentation. Okay, and the beginnings of a fermentation are starch, and the starch could be anything. It could be wheat starch, which would be chametz. It could be corn starch, which would be kidneys, or it could be sweet potato starch, which would be perfectly fine. Okay, so being as I have no way of knowing what that xanthan gum is, I don't know what it's made out of, well then I can't use it. We'll talk about medicines in a second, but something with xanthan gum I wouldn't be able to use unless I knew that it was kosher for Pesach. Not to say that it can't be, but I would just have to know what I'm getting before I decide to use it for Pesach. And then there's things that are a little more subtle, like cheese is made with rennet. You know, if you take a big bucket of milk, it's not going to turn into cheese unless you throw something into it. That rennet could be from chametz. And there's many more examples like that of foods where there are ingredients in there that either it says it on the ingredient panel or it doesn't say it. And knowing how it's made helps you know whether it does or doesn't have chametz. So I don't, you know, most things are not as obvious as licorice. And that's why we try to share information with people. We hopefully know how you make foods, and we try to let people know this is or is not a concern of chametz. Okay. And last in that group is that there are foods that the item itself has no concern of chametz to it, but we have a concern of the kale that it was made on. So if I make apple cider vinegar, and let's say for our purposes that there aren't any questions that the apple cider vinegar itself would be chametz, let's assume that there wouldn't be any chametz in it itself, but apple cider vinegar is made in the same factories where they make malt vinegar. Malt vinegar is, of course, 100% chametz. It's made out of barley. It's pure chametz. So if they share equipment, then we have a concern, not because there's anything in the apple cider vinegar itself, nothing to the vinegar itself, but the equipment it's made on is a question. Okay, so now I'm going to go through 15, I can't say they're random, but roughly, in a random order, 15 types of foods, and try to explain to you what is or is not the chametz concerning them. You guys can feel free to ask questions if you want to. I hope I don't just keep on babbling. Okay. Yes?
Something they use, so soy sauce that doesn't have wheat in it, I would have to worry about the kale.
That's one issue would be the kale. We also have to see what else is in there. You know, I'm just saying to you, there's an obvious chametz in there when you see the second ingredient is wheat.
Right. So okay. There's one without wheat.
Draw plenty of that wheat. Right.
So I have to worry about where they're made.
Yes, I would still worry about it. There's other things to worry about also. Soy sauce is made by a fermentation. That means it uses some microorganism to turn the soy into soy sauce. You know, if you ever ate soybeans, they don't taste like soy sauce. So the way they turn soybeans into soy sauce is they use an enzyme to do that. And that also has an issue to it. I'm not saying that the only issue was the wheat. There could be lots of issues to soy sauce. But I'm just making it's obvious when you open up the can and say, wow, it says wheat, the second ingredient, that's a. Okay. Raw whole eggs, in the shell, plain eggs in the shell, are okay. You can use them for Pesach. Some of them are sold as being pasteurized, which of course means that there's heat involved to kill any bacteria living inside of them. Those are okay as well. The eggs that are pasteurized in equipment that's used just for making eggs, and there's no concern of chametz for those eggs, even the pasteurized ones. However, eggs is one of the examples of a food where we recommend to people to buy it before Pesach. There's three foods particularly that we say that for: eggs, milk, and pre-cut salads, like cut up lettuces or salads or vegetables or things like that. We recommend people to buy them before Pesach, and they all have the same reason. And that is, these items are sold fresh. Which is to say, if chicken lays an egg today, it's going to be that egg is going to be in the store in another day or two. Excuse me. And therefore, the same for the lettuce and the milk, that they're sold fresh. And therefore, there's a concern in the washing of those foods. Milk has vitamins added to it, and the other ones are all washed with different chemicals. There's a very small chance of there being chametz. Not a very serious concern, but it's somewhat of a concern. And therefore, were it to be chametz and it was done on Pesach, if chametz is added to a food, it's not bottled. It can't possibly be bottled. And therefore, if there's any chametz in there, that food would be usher. So therefore, we say you should buy it before Pesach, because even on the small chance that chametz was used, the chametz would have been bottled before Pesach. So you can buy eggs, milk, and these cut up vegetables before Pesach. Oh, I guess it's always nice to have something with a hashgacha. You know there's no chametz, but if you buy it before Pesach, you're okay. And these are the items we tell people should not buy on Pesach. Okay, just to finish off the eggs, liquid eggs, I'm not including this. They have ingredient and kalim issues. So liquid eggs need to be with hashgach.
Salad bags that have a hash on it, is that included in the pre-cut salad?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if they were they should be bought before Yom Tov. They should be bought before Yom Tov. Because now, someone told me that in Kol Tov, I don't know if this is true, in Kol Tov, the eggs that they sell on Chol Hamoed were bought before Yom Tov also. That may well be true, in which case they're fine. I don't know if that's true or not. The point is that as long as they were, whatever processing was done before Yom Tov, then you're okay. Yes?
No, but what she's saying is if it has a hashkafa on it, you still have to buy it before Pesach?
If it has hashgacha that says kosher l'Pesach,
yeah.
No. Then, oh, I'm sorry. Then no, you can buy it whenever you want to. I didn't understand your question. If it says hashgacha kosher l'Pesach, then they're making sure there's no chametz in it. You can buy it whenever you want
so
to.
So that's okay to buy.
Yes.
Are there any out there with that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. There are. Yeah. I mean, it happens to be the one who gives hashgacha on many other things is the Star K. The Star K actually recently just announced that this year there's been a problem of infestation. They haven't been certifying things because of the bugs involved in it. But as far as the kosher l'Pesach part of it, yeah, there's kosher l'Pesach.
Right.
Yes.
I have a question to ask you. You know, he has the Star K and the P. Okay? So if he has that, can you buy that during Kabbalah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear about that. Yes, you can buy that. Yes.
Star K and the triangle K, are they okay?
The things with the Star K are okay.
Star K is the triangle K is not.
Correct. Correct.
The regular K is really.
It depends. It depends who stands behind it. You know, it's a.
You don't know that.
Right. Okay. Let's move on. Yes. If they have hashgacha for Pesach, I suspect that there are brands that are okay. You just can't use the regular one you use all year round. You wouldn't use for Pesach. Okay. In previous years, we told people that shredded coconut all needed hashgacha for Pesach. We've been revised that a little bit this year. For this year, shredded coconut is okay if it's not sweetened or flavored. Okay, if it's just plain old shredded coconut, then it's okay. If it's sweetened or flavored or other things mixed into it, then it needs hashgacha. Okay, dried fruit. The dried fruit in itself is inherently okay. However, in order to keep the fruit from sticking to each other, think about like you know raisins or prunes or dried apricots or anything like that. They coat them with an oil in order to keep them from sticking to each other. That oil is kidneys. There's a certain brand that everybody uses. So we tell people to avoid that without hashgacha, unless it has hashgacha of Pesach. Okay, nuts. There's one type of nut that's considered kidneys, at least in the United States, which is peanuts. In the United States, we consider peanuts to be kidneys. There's one other nut, I'm going to tell you in a second, pecans in a second, but besides for peanuts and pecans, the rule for nuts is if they're not blanched or roasted, they're not turned into a powder, like ground up powder, and they don't have something called BHT or BHA, okay, that's a preservative. As long as it doesn't have any of those things, then you can use them. So if you have shelled nuts that are not ground into a powder or they're just broken into pieces, those are okay for Pesach as long as they're not blanched. Pecans, the CRC has had experience with a company that uses alcohol in the processing of their pecans. So we tell people to not use pecans, shelled pecans without hashgacha. But besides that, and besides the peanuts, all the rest of the nuts fall into the same group. Okay.
You said shelled nuts are okay?
Yes. As long as they're not ground like into a powder. Because that grinding equipment is also used for other things, like when there's no nuts, then like breadcrumbs. Okay, not kosher peso, breadcrumbs. Okay, milk substitutes. Okay, there are lots of people out there who for 100 reasons don't want to drink milk and drink things made from coconut, soy, rice. I mean, you name it, there's a whole slew of different things that you can make what they call milk out of. Those are all suspect, if I could use the word. Okay? All of those start off being suspect, and that's because many of them are kidneys. Like think about rice dream. Okay, rice is kidneys. So that already cuts out lots of people from eating them. But also lots of them use enzymes in them to convert them from, let's say, rice or almond into almond milk or coconut into coconut milk. There are enzymes used in many of these things. Those enzymes, in some cases, sometimes it even says right on the package that the enzyme is chametz. We'll say barley beta amylase right on the side of the package. But sometimes it doesn't say it. And also, some of them don't taste so wonderful, so they add corn syrup or they add flavors into them. So for all of those items, we would tell people as a rule, they should not be using them unless either it comes kosher l'Pesach, there are one or two like almond milks that can come kosher l'Pesach, or if it's for someone who's allowed to eat kidneys. Again, as I said beforehand, a child or an elderly person or someone who's sick or someone in a very specific situation. And the rabbi says, yes, it's okay for them to eat kidneys. So they can eat these foods if they can be sure there's no chametz in them. Okay, well, how am I supposed to know if there's chametz or there's not chametz in them? How am I going to figure that out? And so, again, sometimes it's just straight out. Barley beta amylase right there on the package. But otherwise, how am I supposed to know? And the answer is, again, The people give hashgacha to it, and again, in this case it's the OU, gives hashgacha to it, looks into them, and gives us and everybody else this long list of items that they know have no chametz in them, or have an assumption have no chametz in them, and for the people who are allowed to eat kidneys are allowed to eat those items.
Are you allowed to line the fact that says, let's say, gluten-free on it, that doesn't have chametz?
Okay, it's a good question. The question was, if something says on it that it's gluten-free, does that tell me that it has no chametz? And the answer to that is, no, it's not. It's a good start, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't prove that it doesn't have chametz for a couple of reasons. One is, the most glaring reason why is because you may have heard that General Mills just announced a little while ago that they're going to be making a number of their Cheerios are going to be coming as gluten-free because they figured out a way to sort out the other grains out of the oats. So they're going to be selling Cheerios that are 100% chametz. Okay, they're just made out of oats. The oats can inherently are gluten-free. They're going to be gluten-free, but of course they're going to be pure chametz. Oats, is chametz. And another reason is because the rules for gluten-free and the rules for chametz are not the same. As a rule, the people who need to be gluten-free are allergic to the proteins. Gluten, that word itself, is a description of certain proteins. And things that are not protein are not glutinous. So, for example, I once read a spec sheet for scotch. Okay. Scotch, as you know, is made out of barley. Okay. It was a scotch, and it had 100 questions. It wasn't for rabbis. This was pages and pages of specs about this barley. And when it says, is it gluten-free? It said, yeah, gluten-free, because it has no protein in it, because it only has sugars and starch and alcohol. It has no protein in it. But, of course, it was pure chametz. I mean, it's scotch. It was pure barley. That was the whole thing. Because the rules for gluten-free and the rules for chametz are not exactly the same. So it's a start. Knowing that something is gluten-free is a start to saying that it might be not chametz, but it doesn't mean that it's yet meets our standards. Yes?
I need a clarification, please. For example, rice drink is kosher year-round.
Yes.
But you're saying that since we don't know the kalim that they were made in, if someone needs to have that kind of milk on Pesach, we shouldn't buy it?
I didn't even say the kalim. I said there are ingredients in there that could be chametz. And therefore, you need to turn back. Really, you need to do is turn back to the hashgacha and say to them, is this variety of rice cream okay for Pesach? Now, instead of the OU getting 1,000,000 questions about that, they prepare in advance a list of which rice milk type foods have no chametz in them. That list is in our Pesach card, it's on our website, it's on a lot of other hashgachas website also, because the OU gets so many questions, they said, okay, we'll prepare the information, so whether a specific variety of rice cream is okay or not, I don't know offhand, but we have a long list of which ones are.
And the second question, you said we should buy milk in advance only because of the chametz. Mm-hmm. What about cheese and cream cheese?
Okay, those are not made as fresh as milk is. For milk, if you bought it in advance, then you're okay. So cheeses, I would not say you're okay to buy in advance. You have to buy with hashgacha for Pesach. For plain milk, if you didn't have any milk available, you just buy your milk. Any milk with hashgacha available, you could just buy milk before Pesach and it would be okay. I would not say the same thing for cream cheese. You should not just buy cream cheese before Pesach and then that's good enough. You have to buy it with hashgacha for Pesach. Okay, so the fluid milk itself is different because it's fresh, but also the only concern is the vitamins and basically the only concern is the vitamins added to it. Okay. Okay. Anything that's in a can or a jar, I shouldn't say anything. Almost everything that's in a can or a jar needs to have hashgacha for Pesach. And the reason is because usually something that's in a can or jar, think a can or jar, I mean like tomato paste or applesauce, okay, something like that that's in a can or a jar, baby food, those items, what they do is they put it into the container and then they cook it in the container to sterilize the item to make sure nothing dangerous grows inside of there. And that same equipment is used for chametz also. I mean, I'm buying carrot baby food. Excuse me, but the beforehand was being cooked oatmeal baby food. Okay, so I can't use those things, even if the ingredients are completely innocuous, I can't buy it because of the kalim of what else was cooked on those same kalim, for which today I'm buying just peas, but what was in there yesterday was chametz. Peas are kidneys, but for babies it would be okay, except that what was in there yesterday was chametz. Most vegetable oils are kidneys. All the regular ones that you use during the year, canola, corn, soybean, all of those, the typical vegetable oils that people use during the year are all kidneys. So they're all not allowed because they're kidneys. For Pesach, people use basically one of two choices. Either they use some unusual oils like walnut oil or cottonseed oil, something unusual, not your typical oil, or they use olive oil. Okay? The first group, walnut, cottonseed, those type, need hashgacha for Pesach to make sure they were processed properly. And I'll explain to you what that means in a second. And the same is for olive oil with one exception. And what's going on with the oils is like this. When you press an oil, after you create the oil, it has an odor to it that's considered not desirable. Okay, so in order to remove the oil, they do a process called deodorizing. Okay, they take out the odor. And that process involves heat. And essentially what they do is they're boiling out the odor without boiling out the oil. Okay, they're just letting one part boil out and leaving the rest behind. To make sure that there were no questions of equipment that it was used on, all those types of oils need hashgacha for Pesach. And the one exception is extra virgin olive oil. Extra virgin olive oil is specifically not deodorized. It's never heat processed. And that's the allure, that's the advantage of an extra virgin olive oil, that it doesn't go through those processes. It does have the odor. And therefore, that does not need hashgacha, but all the rest of the oils all need hashgacha for Pesach. Okay. I better move along here. Okay. There's a difference of opinion as to whether carbon dioxide, the bubbles that are in your soda, your pop, your wine, whether those need to be specifically kosher Pesach or not. It is one of the places where you get carbon dioxide from is from the production of beer and whiskey. Beer companies keep the carbon dioxide because, you know, beer has bubbles in it, but whiskey companies don't. And that if someone recovers carbon dioxide from a whiskey company that was making chametz whiskey, there's a difference of opinion as to whether that is or is not considered chametz stick. It came from chametz. The food it came out of was chametz. It's a question whether it is or is not chametz stick. The CRC assumes that it is chametz stick, and therefore we tell people you should only buy things that are carbonated if they have hashgacha for Pesach. So if you want to buy plain seltzer, well, plain seltzer is just water and the bubbles. So the only, and processed cold. So the only concern is to make sure that the bubbles, the carbon dioxide, is kosher for Pesach. Okay. On plain seltzer, that's not flavored? No, it doesn't need hashgacha.
But what about the bubbles?
The places that it's coming from, the part of the process where it's coming from, has no kosher concern that we can think of. So just plain seltzer, not flavored seltzer, is okay for Pesach. Be okay for year-round. For Pesach, we tell people to get with hashgacha.
What about the SodaStream?
So SodaStream, theoretically, needs hashgacha. If you have some kind of a canister like that, it needs hashgacha to know the carbon dioxide. It happens to be the OU says that you can use the SodaStream. The branded SodaStream canisters, they say, okay for Pesach. So, good. Okay, coffee and tea need hashgacha if they're either flavored, decaffeinated, or instant. Okay, basically what I'm telling you is the only coffee and tea you could use without hashgacha are if you have like freshly ground coffee, just the ground beans that are not yet percolated, or something with tea leaves that has nothing else in it and it's not decaffeinated. Okay, if you have pure tea leaves. But once it's flavored or decaffeinated or turned into something instant, then you need hashgacha for Pesach. Okay, I've already mentioned that dairy products all need hashgacha for Pesach. They all have all kinds of things added to them to make them into cheeses and butter and etc. Except for the raw milk. If you buy that before Pesach, that's okay. Raw meat and poultry, if it comes from the original slaughterhouse, in other words, it's packaged in a package that says Aaron's Best or Charabar or Alley Meat or something like that, or Rosenblatt. I don't know if they do their own packaging, but it says there from the original packing house, then that's okay, fresh or frozen. If it was repacked, if it was ground, if it was anything else that they did to it, it needs hashgacha for Pesach. Same for fish. But fish has the extra bonus that frozen fish, even if it's in the original packaging, frozen fish is sometimes glazed with corn syrup. So unless you can get it off, we tell people to buy the hashgacha for Pesach. Okay. And second to last for this section, I'm going to move is plain white sugar, just plain old traditional white sugar, or salt that has no iodine are both okay for Pesach. But if you get confectionery sugar, invert sugar, brown sugar, sugar substitutes, iodized salt, or ground spices, all those groups need hashgacha for Pesach. Each one for their own special reason. But plain old ground sugar, plain white sugar, or salt that has no iodine to it, those are all okay for Pesach without special hashgacha. Okay. Before I move on, any questions? Okay. As a bridge between the foods, yes, you had a question.
Cocoa.
Cocoa. Pure cocoa from the United States is okay. Cocoa from Europe is not. In Europe, you're allowed to add glucose to it, and companies with glucose may get that from chametz also. So from Europe, it needs to have hashgacha. A local American cocoa is okay.
Hershey's cocoa
is also, actually they told us specifically that it's okay for Pesach. It doesn't say OUP on it, but it is okay for Pesach. It is acceptable for Pesach. To bring us over to the next section, which is going to be things that are inedible. There are three items that for year round the CRC considers to be inedible, but for Pesach we're particular that we treat them as if they are edible. Okay, for year-round, we tell people that mouthwash and toothpaste and lipstick is okay no matter what it comes from. Doesn't make a difference whether it is or does not have hashgacha. There's a preference to use ones that are kosher, but that it's okay if not. We consider them to be inedible. But for Pesach, those three items, we tell people, you need to know that they have no chametz in them. So for mouthwash and toothpaste, that's quite a small list that we have of things that we could tell people that we know have no chametz in them. For the lipsticks, that's been an ever-growing list of things that we know about. And as I'll tell you about it later, we collect long lists of the ingredients that go into the lipsticks. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many ingredients there could be in lipstick. And go through them to tell people, these ones we know have no chametz. We went through all the ingredients. There's nothing in there that could be chametz. And other ones that we don't recommend. Okay, but those are available either from our office, again, our websites and all those, etc. To know which lipsticks are or not. If you don't see your lipstick on there, it's just because we couldn't get that information from the company. We went through quite a lot of information to try to list many of them. Okay, so now let's start with the so to speak, real inedibles. We sort of made our way over from those sort of inedibles to the ones that are really inedible. Okay, so there are some people who are of the opinion that if a food is inedible, and it's made out of chametz, you still should not use it on Pesach. There is such a way of thinking out there. That's not the way the CRC or most others or many others think. And therefore, the way we look at it is, if something is chametz thick but it's not edible, it's okay, you're allowed to use it. Okay, and the sort of the test, if you want to know, is my food edible or not edible, think about taking a bite out of it. Okay, so if you have a body soap and would you want to eat it, you wouldn't want to eat it. Okay, so if you think about it, if you're not sure, you could bite it, we've done that. And you want to know nail polish and petroleum jelly, is it or is it not edible, is it not edible? So you can either trust us, what we think, or you could try it yourself. Sometimes we do that. Just last week, I was the guinea pig. But if it's not edible, then we don't care whether it is or is not chametz. Oh, wait one second. There's one item that even people who think the way we do are more machmir on, and that is dish detergent, what you wash your dishes with. Those are not edible. They're also probably not chametz, but they're also not edible. The CRC's position is not like that, and if it's not edible, it's still okay to wash your dishes with. Knowing that I was going to be speaking, I guess, February 1st, and he said this, he thinks the same way, that it's dish detergent is okay. It doesn't make a difference what type it is, whether it doesn't have chametz, because when you wash your dishes, it's not edible, and that's okay. Did you have a question?
Why is it okay to use body wash that may have chametz in it, but it's not okay to have Play-Doh?
Okay, so it's a very good question. It's a whole separate discussion whether Play-Doh is or is not considered edible. And that actually, we did some taste testing on that also. But that's not for today. If you look on our website, there's a two-shirim on it about whether Play-Doh is or is not considered edible. It's a good question. It's a fair question. Most of the dogs that we tried on would not touch it. But that's its own separate question. Okay. Do you have a question in the back?
Is Scopo okay to use?
Okay, that brand of scope, we don't have information on it, and therefore we don't recommend it. It does contain sensitive ingredients in it, and therefore...
So what do you recommend to use for a mouthwash?
So there are two varieties that I know of, two varieties of Toms of Maine mouthwash that we know have no chametz. Toms of Maine. I don't know all of them. There are two varieties of them that we know have no chametz in them. That's what we recommend people to use. Yes?
Star K publishes a list of...
I'm going to get to that in a second. Okay. When I talk about the medicines, I'm going to talk about that. Yes?
Dish detergent, is that different from dish soap?
No, same thing. No, same thing. That's fine. Okay. The last I need to talk about for inedibles are items that are inherently inedible, but there are some of them do or don't have something on top of what's inedible. And therefore, if it has a coating on top of it that is edible, then it would be a concern. The item itself is not edible. Okay, I mean, think about it. If I took something that was not edible and onto it I smeared some chametz, edible chametz on it, I wouldn't be allowed to use it. Okay, so let me give you first the ones that have no issue to them at all. Okay. Items made out of aluminum foil, like foil pans, aluminum foil, plastic, styrofoam, paper, like paper bags, coffee filters, napkins, all those things are all okay. Okay, all those things don't have coatings on them, and there's no concern about using those things with or without hashgacha for Pesach. Yes?
Reynolds Wrap makes it's called non-stick foil, and mm-hmm. it's got like a coating on it.
Yes.
Is that okay?
I don't remember that one offhand. Some of them, like there are parchment papers, I'm going to talk about parchment paper in a second, have a coating on them that we don't know and they need hashgacha v'pesach.
Not to
use. Okay, so you should know. I don't remember that brand offhand. You can either call the CRC office or you could open up the OU's Pesach guide, because there they have a long list, I think the pages are yellow now, of pages that have items that they give hashgacha to that they say they're okay for Pesach even without a P. And there are a number of Reynolds products. I don't know if that one is or is not on the list. Yes? Parchment paper does need hashgacha. I was going to get to that in a second. Okay, but regular, I'm talking about regular paper like a napkin or a paper plate or those kind of things, those paper bags.
What about the glue on the paper towel?
The glue on the paper towel? So whenever I hear that, I always laugh or in time because Rabbi Goldzweig, Shpigazon, used to speak before Pesach. And when he would always get that question, and they would say to him, well, what about I heard that this glue at the beginning is chametz stick? And he would therefore told, don't use the first couple of pieces, sheets. So Rabbi Goldzweig says, you know, my address is this and this and this. Everyone should bring the first three sheets to my house. We won't have to buy paper towels for Pesach. You know? That's what he would tell people. You know? So, you know, it's not a problem. The test is, I mean, think about if you want to eat the glue, you don't want to eat the glue. Okay, that's just your mindset is, would I eat that or would I not eat it? So most people wouldn't want to eat it. Okay.
I remember probably years ago, they used to talk about things how they used to, like some of the things that you could decipher the chametz out.
I'm getting to that. Very good, I'm getting to that. I'm going to get to in a minute. I'm coming right to that. Very good. Okay, so there are a few things that have questions about coatings on them. Okay, and I'm going to go through them, and they are, first, the beginning of it, which is, braces, dentures, all kinds of things that go in your mouth, dental appliances, etc. We assume that they do not absorb any chametz. So even though all year round you eat chametz with them, you don't have to do anything before Pesach except for clean them very well. Okay, make sure that there's no chametz left in them from your breakfast on Erev Pesach. However, the wax on braces is also okay. The rubber bands that people use on their braces, the rubber bands have a coating on them. They have a starch on them, and therefore we tell people if they should rinse those off before they use them. Yes?
Another person not to eat anything hot for 24 hours.
So I don't know what Rabbi first says. I actually was thinking of asking him. I don't. Maybe he said. There are definitely people who say that for 24 hours before Pesach, you shouldn't eat anything hot on your braces. So if that's what Rabbi first said, then and that's what you want to do, that's fine. I mean, that's not what the Sirshi tells people, but there are definitely people who say that for 24 hours before Pesach, you shouldn't eat hot food. And if he says it, then that's fine. I mean, that's very legitimate, you know, it's a...
Hot chametz.
No,
hot food.
He said hot food? Okay, so we'll have to send someone on a mission to find out what he said. Okay, dental floss, the wax on it is not a problem. Flavored, we recommend you not use a flavored dental floss with Pesach. Balloons and gloves, disposable gloves tend to have a starch on them also. And in the gloves, I don't know who came up with this, but it's really true that the people who make gloves, you have two different terms for describing gloves that don't have starch in them. There are some that are called powder-free, and there are some that are called powderless. Now, in English, those both mean the same thing. Powder-free and powderless means it doesn't have powder. Okay, but wherever they make the powdered gloves, that's not how it works. Okay, people make powdered gloves. Powder-free means it has no powder.
Then it's okay.
Right, and powderless means it has less powder. Less powder than the other ones do. Okay, I don't know who exactly which ESL class the person went to for that one, but that powderless means it has less powder. So it has powder, but not so much. And it's for real. That's how they work. And powder-free means it has no powder. So whatever that means. Okay, yes?
My niece wanted to ask me for a different state. Is vinyl, just plain vinyl, okay? Vinyl gloves?
Vinyl gloves. It depends. The disposable vinyl gloves?
Yeah.
It depends if they have powder or not in them. So it'll say on it, either it says nothing, then it probably has powder. Or it says powderless or powder-free, and then you'll figure it out from there. Okay. The last thing about inedibles is what someone mentioned.
It says latex-free. It's still can have powder.
Yes. Yeah, latex-free is relates to the material that the glove is made out of.
So it's still can have powder.
It can still have a powder to keep it from sticking together. Okay. The last is what someone had mentioned, which is there's something called denatured alcohol. That is, as I've mentioned already beforehand, that alcohol can be made from chametz. It often is, or from kidneys. And the government charges very high taxes on people who use alcohol for drinking purposes, like for whiskey purposes. In order to save that tax, the government has the following rule, which is if you add something to it that makes it either poisonous or tastes awful, then we know no one's going to eat it, and that alcohol is saved from this very high tax. It's no one's going to use it for a beverage anymore. So if you denature it, it means you either add this poison or something that tastes really awful, then you don't pay tax on it. Okay? There's a big discussion in the Poskim whether denatured alcohol made from chametz is or is not awesome. On the one hand, it's not edible. Right now, the alcohol as it stands now, no one could eat it. That's the whole point. Okay? It's meant for being used in shampoo or whatever. It's not meant to be eaten, and it can't be eaten. It's not edible. On the other hand, it is theoretically possible to get the denaturing out, to remove that other material and leave just the alcohol behind. It's a big question in the Poskim whether you should or should not use those things on Pesach. The CRC takes the position that you cannot use them on Pesach. You should not use them on Pesach, unless you know that they have no chametz in them. So therefore, perfumes, spray deodorants, baby wipes, hairspray, all those items, if they have in them denatured alcohol, then there's a concern. How would I know? For the ones that have ingredient panels, it'll say on the ingredient panel, it'll either say something like alcohol, okay, then you know. It'll say denatured alcohol, and you also know. Sometimes it says SD alcohol, that stands for specially denatured alcohol. Or sometimes it'll say SDA26B, okay? That means it's specially denatured alcohol, denatured using formula number 26B, okay? Or if there's such a thing. But it has some indication that's what it's made out of. Let me just finish 1 second. And to help people with these kind of things, the CRC sends people to the pharmacy, to this drugstore, and looks around for ones that don't have them. So we have a list of spray deodorants that don't have denatured alcohol in them. Okay? Instead of waiting for the questions, we just went into the pharmacy and looked at them ourselves.
How about this inedible for reasons other than the fact that...
Then you're good. Then it's good. Like, for example, if it's in a shampoo, there may be denatured alcohol, so the alcohol per se is a problem. But the whole rest of it makes inedible, then that's fine. It's only if it's just, so like something like a spray deodorant, aside from the denaturing, it would be reasonably edible. It's alcohol and fragrance. That's all it is to it. So it would be relatively edible except for the other part. We did not try that. But if you want to be our guinea pig, then yes.
It's not enough if you knew offhand if sure deodorant was okay.
I don't remember offhand. Okay. If I wasn't standing up here, I would look at Ask Cersei and see what it says about sure. And if you're bored afterwards, you can do that also. Just type in sure into the S-U-R-E, and it'll tell you whether we know about... Now, you also get insure, maybe, but you should find out whether... If we know about sure deodorant, it'll say it in there.
Also, do you know about Prilosec, if it's okay?
Prilosec is a pill. We're going to talk about medicines in a second. Pills are okay. We're going to talk about it in a second. Okay.
You're saying that a shampoo, you can't separate the bad parts from the alcohol?
Right. In denatured alcohol, there's enough procedure, enough knowledge of how to get it out, that there's what to talk about that you could separate them. You can't get the denatured alcohol. You can't get everything else out of the shampoo except for the alcohol. Within any reasonable way, and therefore that's okay.
Sure
Someone sitting in the back looked it up and said that, sure, the ordinance is okay. If he says, believe him. Okay. And I would say that even if he wasn't the boss. Okay. So now we move on to our last topic, which is the medicines. Yes.
So I don't know, how do I know if things are, like, have a code? Like when you have like I have these cupcake, like muffin made from paper, but it seems like a wax thing around. Okay.
Some have wax coating. Some have a wax coating on them.
Yeah.
That's not any Clement's concerns. Those are fine.
Yeah.
The ones that have that are just the paper, like a cupcake holder,
yeah,
or a napkin, those, there's nothing on top of them. We've been to paper factories, talked to people in the industry, and there's nothing on them. It's just plain old
and
paper.
And the ones that also seem to have like a shine.
Those have a wax on them. That's not a Clement's concern.
That's not a Clement's concern. I can use that.
So you could use those. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So most of you here have probably seen what they call the CRC medicine letter. It's a letter signed by a number of Rabbanim here in town. And it says basic rules of how people should or should not treat medicines for Pesach. And on it it says that items that are not edible, that is to say primarily pills, things that you could not possibly eat, that are not edible, those you could use no matter what. And the concerns for Pesach for medicines relate primarily to liquids and chewables. Things that are in pill form don't have a Pesach concern. They're not edible. So that's the general rule. And I'll give you a drop of detail in a second. That's the general rule. And the second half of the rule, this is not in the letter, is as follows. If you are not sure whether you should take something or not take it, you're sitting in front of your medicine, you don't know which category it fits in, or you know it's in this category, but you're not sure, you're supposed to take it or you're not supposed to take it, here's the rule you should follow. If it's for a serious condition, like you have asthma, and you don't know if your inhaler is at this side or this side, should I take it or should I not use it? So if it's for a serious condition, you should take it, and then call the rabbi later when you have a chance. If it's for a not serious condition, call the rabbi first, and then decide if you should use it. Okay, if you're taking something for a serious condition, or something serious, chances are that either it's mutter because it's edible, not edible, or it's mutter because it's not even chametz. Forget about that, it's mutter because you're in a serious condition. Chances are that the thing doesn't have chametz in it anyhow. So if you have something that's for a serious condition, don't ask questions. Use it, if you're stuck, use it and ask your questions afterwards. If it's something that's not so serious, if it's something that you're using for, I don't know, so over the counter to, you know, get rid of your dandruff, that's not so serious, then ask questions before you use it. Okay, now there are, as was already mentioned even, and you're all well aware, that there are two different groups of people who put together lists of medicines that are or are not acceptable for Pesach. We're not terribly comfortable with the way those lists are put together. And both of those lists have the same concern as from our perspective. And that is, they're coming from a perspective that even if it's not edible, it still needs to know that it has no chametz in it. Well, from that perspective, you have thousands of items that have to be looked into. When you have thousands of items to be looked into, by your nature, you're limited to how much you can do. How much can I find out about thousands and thousands of items? And therefore, they pull the companies with a certain information. They say to the company, please tell me if this and this item has these ingredients or doesn't have these ingredients, or etc. We're not terribly comfortable the way that information comes back. And therefore, we don't use those recommendations for people. Instead, we go with our approach, which we think is correct. And that is, as I mentioned, pills and creams and other things that are not edible don't need hashgacha for Pesach. They're all okay. The liquids and the chewables are more the issue. And for those, what we do is as follows. Again, we send people to the pharmacy. They walk up and down the aisles. We have a big database full of ingredients that are used in these medicinal items, and each specific item, what the ingredients are for that item. And then one of the rabbis goes through it and says, is there chametz in here? Oh, what kind of a form is this thing? Who uses this medicine? And makes a judgment on, can you or can you not use this item? And then we have then listed from it's in our book, it's on our website, and we continuously update it, and we answer questions on the phone either. Hi, I have something that's not on my list. Can you tell me if I could use it for Pesach? And we, by looking at what's inside of it, and judging its form and who uses it, we then tell people whether they could or cannot use it. We consider this to be more appropriate of how to do it. Again, you couldn't do that if you had to look into 10,000 items. It would just be overwhelming, the work that has to be done. Once we like narrowed it down to the ones that are more serious to think about, then it is a reasonable amount of work, and that's what we do. Yes?
What about pills that have a coating on them to make them easier to swallow?
Okay, so there's two groups within pills that have coatings. Almost all pills that have coatings are just coated with something innocuous. The coating is nothing and doesn't pose a basic concern. And that's the bulk of pills, and that's why we say pills are okay. There are a handful, primarily over-the-counter ones, where my brand is competing with the other person's brand, where they put a sweet coating on the outside. Then it depends what's on there. Okay, there's one that comes to mind, but there's really only a handful, because it's only for over-the-counter items where there's competition, and even those, there's very few that have in them actually something that's a serious a concern. But by and large, the coatings are nothing. The coatings are just a wax. It's... Any more questions? Yes?
What's the issue with the other lists getting the information from the company? You don't trust the company?
No, you're actually allowed to trust the company. We can talk about this in more detail, but the questions are what types of questions are asked, what questions do they ask the company to give them for, and who is the person you ask to? There's a true promotion, as you probably know, that when the company provides information, it can be acceptable under the right circumstances. So we don't think that they're getting it right. We could talk about it afterwards if you want the gory details. Yes?
Things like toothpaste and mouthwash, you got a new mouth, and you just continue
using it. Oh, very good. I forgot to mention that. Very good point. Assuming you're using a toothpaste or a mouthwash or something like that, which is recommended, it's okay for Pesach, yes, you should use a new can. You should not be using the one that you use all year round with around your mouth and food and like that. And yes, you should use a new can of it. Yes, a new container. Antacids. So if it's in pill form, like Prilosec, someone mentioned, that's okay, not a problem. If it's chewable, like Tums or Titrilac, those that are chewable, those we need to know whether there is or not chametz in them. They almost always have kidneys in them. For a chaylah, that's okay to use the kidneys, but you have to know if there's chametz in them. So some of them we list if we have information, or we look into it, depending on what's in there. You know?
So is the concern, like you're getting rid of them, like you're putting it aside to sell it, so you have to go through the list of like chewable pills and liquid medicines to put away.
Correct.
Is that you have to either you have to sell that chametz?
Correct. If it's chametz, again, in my house right now, yeah, with the medicines, there's Benefiber. There's Benefiber. Well, I can't leave the Benefiber for Pesach because it's chametz. I either have to get rid of it or I have to sell it. I can't keep my Benefiber. And next to it is Miralax. Miralax is okay for Pesach, so that I can keep. I can even use it on Pesach, but I can't use the Benefiber. So I have to keep that in mind when I'm sorting through my medicines to know which ones I can or can't use.
The same thing with toothpaste also?
Mm-hmm.
That's also just as chametz.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not as chametz. It's not as bad.
No,
but it's sensitive that it may... I put it away. Yes. There are actually two Tom's of Mains that are also okay. Two Tom's of Mains. Of course, you can all use AbbVie products, but there's two Tom's of Mains that I know we recommend to people. And there may be others. That's what comes to mind, that we have these two Tom's of Mains that we tell people to use. Yes?
You said that if it's not such a serious condition, you should ask your rep. So like heartburn, to me it's a serious condition, but it might not be. You know, like, are you allowed to take pills without question?
If it's a pill, in a pill form, that's fine. Yes. Don't think about it.
It's not a serious
yes.
condition.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
I don't know how to do it. Can you turn this off?